Some of the greatest music makers of our time have had a disability. Disability doesn't stop artists from creating brilliant music, but still today there are many barriers that artists face. My name is Eliza Hull, and this is Access All Areas, where I give you a pass to learn about what it's like to be a musician with a disability. I have a physical disability, Charcot-Marie-Tooth. I'm also a musician, and throughout my career, I've faced many physical barriers and discrimination. The time is now to begin the conversation about how the music industry can be more inclusive and accessible.
Our love's a complex vintage wine, all rotted leaves and lemon rind.
Galen Lee is an American folk singer and violinist. In 2016, Galen won NPR's Tiny Desk Contest with her song Someday Will Linger in the Sun. Since then, she's toured 45 states and 9 countries. She's played major festivals like South by Southwest and Winnipeg Folk Festival. She's also opened for Wilco, The Decemberists, and Low.
And I love you.
Galen's haunting original songs and traditional fiddle tunes have captivated audiences around the world. Galen is a wheelchair user and is short statured. She's also a huge disability advocate within the music industry. Galen, welcome, and thanks for joining us on Double J.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So I first wanted to know, when did you first pick up the fiddle?
I started playing violin in 5th grade. In school, there was an orchestra that came to our school in 4th grade, and I loved the way it sounded. And the next year, we had a chance to join ourselves, and so I jumped at the opportunity. And I was very lucky. I have a disability. You know, I use a wheelchair, and my arms and legs are shorter because of a disability called brittle bones disease, or osteogenesis imperfecta. And I was lucky that when I decided I wanted to join, that the teacher was willing to help me adapt the instrument because I couldn't play it up on my shoulder. And so we kind of experimented until we found something that worked. So I've been playing the way that we kind of figured out together ever since I was 10.
How did your songwriting then evolve? You started playing the violin. When did you realize that actually I can start making songs?
That came way later. I played violin classically all the way through high school. And then in college, I got interested in Celtic folk music or more like fiddle tunes, traditional fiddle tunes. And then through that group of people, I kind of got introduced to being a performer. So I was in bands where I was sort of like the backup violin and harmony person for like a few different bands, folk bands and indie bands. And then the big changing turning point for me came 17 years after I learned how to play the violin. I met someone named Alan Sparhawk. He's in the band Low, which is a pretty popular indie band that tour, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. And he's from Duluth, and where I'm from. And he introduced me to the looping pedal, which is a recording device that kind of layers up the violin as I want it to in real time. And when I got exposed to that, something like a fuse blew in my brain or something, and I started writing songs kind of out of nowhere. And it really was a surprise because I never thought I was a songwriter or that I didn't even have a goal to become one, but I just kind of started writing. And I was 27 when I wrote my first song.
Wow. Because your songs are incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to them a lot. I wondered, when was the first time that you wrote about your experience of being disabled?
Yeah, the very first, I think disability influences subtly pretty much every song I write, because if you have brittle bones disease or osteogenesis imperfecta, you break bones kind of spontaneously. Not completely spontaneously, but you'll break bones in ways that other people wouldn't, you know. I remember getting my arm caught on my jacket once and I broke my arm, and I was like, so your life sort of, it becomes evident at a very early age that life is sort of impermanent. Not that it's necessarily like a fatal disability or anything, but the idea that you can have a plan for the next 2 months of your life, and then in one minute, you know, increment of time, all of a sudden your arm is broken and everything looks different. You know, you need help to do everything, and all those plans are kind of set aside. And so that kind of impermanence, I think, creeps into all of my songs. But the first one specifically thinking about disability was a song called Bird Song that I released under the name The Murder of Crows. We released an EP together right as I started songwriting. It's me and Alan Sparhawk as a duo. And the album's called Imperfecta. Was sort of thinking about music, actually, from a disability perspective, like how I felt like I really wanted to pursue music. I was loving it, and I played a lot locally, and it was something that gave me a lot of joy. But I wondered how seriously I would be taken as an artist, or if there would be like a glass ceiling because of my disability. And in the end, the song is kind of about deciding to sing anyways, right? Because it just makes you feel so good. So that's sort of the same. And it's very, very loose. I mean, you would listen to that song, and unless you were disabled, I don't think you would probably pick up on that messaging. But I've had disabled people come up and say, that song has to be about disability. And it totally is. And that was really early. I think that's like the second song, maybe third song that I ever wrote was that one.
Amazing. For me, like as a disabled musician, you've been someone that I've turned to, you know, to read what you write, to see your advocacy work. You know, to me, you really, like, you're a proud disabled person. I wondered, have you always been proud of your disability identity?
Actually, it's evolved. It's not like I was ashamed. I think by the time I was 13 or so, in large part, I think because of the violin, I had kind of given up the idea of trying to fix my disability. You know, there was a series of surgeries. I would have had one every summer for 4 years in a row where they would have corrected the bend in my limbs, so that maybe I could have walked, but I also might have just been able to stand, or maybe it would have failed completely. You know, there was no guarantee. And so by the time I was about 13, I had decided that wheelchairs were improving and I had a good life. I was really engaged and I had good friends and a good family, and I didn't feel that walking would add a significant boost to my life anymore. I was sort of over the idea that that's what I needed to be happy. And so by the time I was 13, I was pretty comfortable in my own skin, but I didn't see disability. And it was definitely like a part of my identity. And I remember telling my dad once that I felt like I was supposed to be born this way. And I remember being surprised, but he was kind of confused by that. But I really felt like it was definitely part of my life plan. However, I didn't think of disability activism because I was, you know, as you are probably, very adaptable and just kind of made the best of a lot of situations in terms of inaccessibility or dealing with people's views on disability. I just kind of always was troubleshooting, and I didn't think of it in a broader context until I got to college and started getting introduced. I remember I read the book, and if you haven't read it, it's really good, called Too Late to Die Young by Harriet McBride Johnson. And that was the first time where I was like, oh, first of all, these problems are everywhere, and second of all, there's something you can do about it, and so then I got excited about advocacy. I worked at a center for independent living for a little while. In college, I was involved in getting a deaf studies minor secured at our school, because there wasn't secured funding. And then really the activism took a huge step forward as I started to tour. Like after I won NPR Music's Tiny Desk Contest, I started touring full time with my husband. He would drive and set up my gear and I would play. And seeing all the barriers in music, specifically in the music industry, really kind of lit a fire to make change. That's like, it's not like my first love. Music, I think, is what I would do if I didn't have to think about advocacy, but because I feel comfortable speaking about it and because I want to see change for the next generation, it has definitely been folded into my career and my mission in life.
Does that ever feel heavy? Like, do you ever just get tired of talking about it and being in the advocacy space?
That's a funny question. I mean, it's funny because you do end up answering the same questions all the time, and you're like, well, I could refer to you to this interview where I answered all these same questions. But in reality, no, because right now, as you know, I'm helping to launch a group called Ramped. As you know, Eliza, not the people of Australia, but it's called Ramped. It's recording artists and music professionals with disabilities. And I met this lady, Lachi. She's a blind singer from New York City. I met her through a bunch of panels, and we kept being on these panels about diversity and disability. And we're like, we need to create something that's bigger than a discussion, that's like a movement, right? And she had this idea of a group called Ramped and asked if I would like to help jumpstart it with her as co-founder. And it was like a fairy godmother came down. I was like, finally, I don't feel like I'm doing this alone. And that's huge. I don't think I realized that I was kind of burned out or that I felt oppressive to always be the only one talking about it in my circle. I knew there were other people out there like you doing the work, but not to really connect with them. It was more draining than I realized because when I found community, and the excitement, not just of like making arts more accessible and always fighting, but like switching the conversation up to like celebrating disability culture and acknowledging that disability is actually a normal part of human diversity and that we deserve the same like cultural respect that like, people of color and people of different, gender orientations and sexual orientations, but like that it's the same idea that we can celebrate disability in that way as an identity. That is where I got like it's exciting. Now I feel like, yeah, now I want to do even more because this message really resonates with me, and also I think is going to be the kind of thing that takes disability out of like a series of boxes that you have to check so you don't get sued, or like money that you have to spend because otherwise, people will be mad at you, and change the dialogue to like, let's make the world inclusive because that's fun. It's better that way. That's exciting to me. So now I would say activism has a new layer of joy that I don't necessarily think I could have said before Ramped was formed.
I love that. I love it. That joyful pride and that what can we like the actual things that we bring to the music industry and to our art, music is just there's so much we bring to it because we are disabled. So I love that idea. It's beautiful.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited about it. So we'll see what
It's
happens.
great. Now we're going to go to another song. Can you tell us what you've chosen for us, Galen?
Yes, this song I wrote is called I Wait, and it's actually a song I wrote about disability rights movement in America. Theoretically, disability rights and accessibility have been written into law for the last 31 years, but they're not enforced very often, and people with disabilities are not given a seat at the table to be leaders to make sure that we enforce it, right? And so I wrote this song out of kind of a place of frustration about people with disabilities not being included in the discussion enough. And so this is like maybe my only angry song, I guess I should say. So here it is. I wait.
You started this group, RAMD, which is such an incredible advocacy group filled with disabled musicians. What are the real changes you want to see in the music industry for disabled artists and people involved in the music industry?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple main ones. The first one has to do with accessibility in the arts. You know, as I use an electric wheelchair to get around, and I can't tell you how many places I can't play, basically, because I can't get in the door, or I can't use the bathroom. Definitely the green room's not even really on my list of priorities at this point. and then getting on the stage is another huge barrier at a lot of venues. I'm not sure exactly how, because Australia, I have not actually been to Australia yet, but you know, the UK, France, the US, all of these countries that I have been to, Canada, they all have similar barrier levels, I guess, for disabled artists. And so I want to see changes at the physical barrier level to be prioritized as like an absolute must for budget. I like to think of it as social discrimination. I'm not trying to make comparisons, and I don't think we should, between any other minorities and disability, but there is something to be said for the fact that if you bar people from entering based on your inaccessibility into your space, in 2021, when we've all paid lip service to the idea of diversity at this point, right? Or most people I hang out with have anyways. We supposedly care about diversity, but we still haven't put the money or even just time and thought, because a lot of times it's not exorbitantly expensive, it's just never been done, into making spaces accessible. I think that's a pretty problematic issue. And if we only talk about it as a budget issue in 2021, it's not going to be taken seriously enough. I think we have to start talking about the real result is that you're discriminated against. You can't go places, you know, because of your disability. And it makes my career much harder because we haven't normalized disability. So I'm always the one asking about ramps, and I'm always the one, you know, pointing out barriers in my own career because people are so uneducated about it. Some venues have literally never realized that you might want to ramp to the stage. When I bring it up, it's not that they're opposed to the idea, it's that they've literally never thought about it before. And that's a sign that we haven't been doing a good job educating people on why this is important. The second thing for me is getting better and more representation. I think it's really cool that Double J is having you do this series, because mainstream culture generally still leaves disability out. And there's such ample opportunity, you know, RAMPD, the reason we started is basically like our end goal is to become a resource guide, because we're not expecting to, we're all artists, we're all working musicians. So our goal is not to like all quit our music jobs and start advocating full time. Our goal is to say, look, if you want to get more diverse, here's a list of, you know, 200 disabled artists that you might not have heard of, and go pick some of their brains. You know, it doesn't have to just be me and Lachi always educating. It can be anyone who is a disabled artist who is a professional, right? And so, and just kind of building up that presence through this database is sort of one of our big goals. So representation is huge. It shouldn't just be on July 26th in America when we celebrate the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, or only on December 3rd. DJs should be playing disabled artists all the time. You know, in America anyways, the stat is 1 in 4 people with in America have some sort of disability. And I just don't believe, and maybe, yeah, I'd love to be corrected, but I don't believe that 1 in 4 of the musicians we hear on the radio identify as having some sort of disability, you know, and that's the kind of equity I want to see. And then last but not least, my big goal, overarching goal, is I think music is a good way to change culture because it kind of touches you in a different spot in your heart or your gut or whatever, where you're not thinking as rationally, you're not forming arguments, you're being moved by music. And I think music is a good cultural entry place to start taking away the negative energy that we attach to disability. You know, everybody, hopefully, if they live long enough, gets old, and disability affects not just the 1 in 4 Americans or people around the world that have some sort of disability from birth, but it can affect you at any time in life. And when we are stuck on ideas like, you know, they suffer from a disability, they're a victim of a stroke, they're confined to a wheelchair, when we use negative language like that, or when we say, when we spend so much energy trying to fight aging or fight disability, I think we waste a lot of energy where we could just be like adapting to it and celebrating it, as I said earlier. So like taking away that negativity, I think would help a lot of people be happier in their own skin. That was a very long answer and I apologize. And I hope, do you have any thoughts to add to that? But like, this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately. Like, what's the main goal of all this? And I think it really is like, let's divorce disability from negativity. I think we just need to, it's diversity. It's not negative. It's different. It's not inherently negative, even though, yes, feeling in pain, you know, I have chronic pain and stuff. I don't love those. I wouldn't be like, yes, this is positive. But I could have chronic pain if I wasn't disabled. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not disability. Most often, it's just a different way your body is. And why does it have to be inherently negative? And plus, I'm not less valuable when I have a broken arm. I'm not less of a person when I can't go out and make music because I'm recovering. And so why do we have to tie it to so much negative energy? I'd like to see that change. I don't know how you feel about that. You have a different disability than me. So like, I'd be curious to see what you
I mean, I
think
totally
about.
Agree. I think that we've got to get out of this mentality that disability is something that needs to be fixed. For like all my life, it's always been that kind of, you know, wouldn't you want to fix it? Wouldn't you want to have surgery to get rid of it? And it's like, people get so confused and puzzled when I say no. Like, I would definitely not choose to fix my disability. Like, it's who I am. It's part of me. So, yeah, I think it's this these negative ideas of what it is to be disabled. Getting rid of that is very important. You're writing a book. That's you. Every time I send you an email, it comes back with a an email yeah. saying, "Don't bother me. I'm writing a book." how's it going? And what's it about?
It's going well. I mean, it's in the earlier stages because I'm also writing a soundtrack to a Broadway production of Macbeth in New York right now, and that kind of came up suddenly. And so I'm really until March, pretty much going to be focusing on the soundtrack for Macbeth. But the book is, it's going to be a memoir, and basically every other chapter is going to be childhood, growing up with a disability, you know, becoming an adult in a world not designed for you. And then the second half of the book is going to be kind of everything from winning the tiny desk forward. And so it'll kind of alternate between younger years and more current years. And I'm really excited about that because I want people to pick it up, you know, I want some people to pick it up because they want to learn more about disability, but I want others to feel like they can read it because they want to know more about music and what it's like being a touring musician. because I kind of want to sneak attack educate people. Like, I don't want it to be just a book about disability. I want it to talk about like the life of being an independent artist, because it's such a fun world. I don't, you know, it's like I haven't toured in a while, obviously, because of COVID, but we toured 9 or 10 months every year for 4 or 5 years before COVID hit. And it's such a different world. You're like a truck driver who plays shows at the end of their day. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's a fun world that I was excited to get to experience. And I want to showcase that. And then also, of course, educate about disability and disability culture, but just through kind of incidental storytelling instead of making it a textbook.
Can't wait. Now we're going to go to one of your songs. Galen, what have you chosen for us today?
This song is called Lost in the Woods, and it's a song that was on my 2018 album, Learning How to Stay. And this one's kind of about holding on to your identity and your integrity and your values, even in the midst of a changing world. And it kind of keeps getting new layers of meaning for me the longer, especially through the pandemic, holding on to your true values, I think.
When you were lost in the woods, you were misunderstood by everyone, everyone. You were searching for words, but they came out absurd, and no one heard you, no one heard you speak your mind. They lost the time. Where's your heart?
Last question. I'm curious, what's next in terms of your original music? Are you writing any new music at the moment?
Well, as I alluded to earlier, I am currently making original music for a Broadway production of Macbeth that stars Daniel Craig and Ruth Negga. And I'm really, really, really excited. It's a lot more experimental and kind of a dark soundtrack more than it is like a folk album, which is what I mostly make. And so it's just a really cool creative project. And musically, besides that, I'm just trying to capture down songs as I go and not put too much pressure on myself, because this is definitely taking all my creative juice right now. I'm hoping to be able to release some of the music at a future date, even if people aren't able to get out to New York to watch it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Double J. Thanks, Galen.
Thanks so much, Eliza.